Bless you. I want to invite you again to Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, 3 verses there. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me and the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul?" Amen. I want to put a tag on this text, and your answer is, and your answer is, Mark chapter 8 is, it's one of my favorite chapters of the Bible, because in Mark chapter 8, Jesus begins, when you read the whole chapter and then get on a ladder and look down at it, you'll see how Jesus is using this whole narrative as an example of what disciple and what being a disciple is. It begins with Jesus feeding the 4,000. When he fed the 4,000, he had 7 loaves, and he gave it to the disciples. They broke it, blessed, and passed it out. And after they fed the multitude, Jesus gets into a boat, and he runs into some Pharisees, and they say, "Show us a sign from heaven," as if what he had done wasn't enough. Then the disciples get in the boat, and somebody's stomachs growl. Isn't it interesting, Junior, that when you cook, you've got to pursue the food, purchase the food, prep the food, prepare the food, then present the food. And one of the things that is common for somebody who has to go purchase, pursue the food, prep the food, prepare the food, and present the food, sometimes when you're doing all of that, you don't eat yourself. Because then you're also sitting on pins and needles wondering how people are going to respond to what you presented. And then after all said and done, your stomach starts to growl. They get on the boat, somebody's stomach growled, and they said, this is my sanctified imagination, but it's in the text, "Hand me the bread." And Peter said to John, Mark said, "Hand him the bread." And John said to Matt, "Hey, pass up the bread." Went on down the line, and then somebody said, "Where's the bread?" And people looked around, and they couldn't find, but one loaf of bread. Somebody got irritated, I know they did, and started throwing each other under the boat. "Didn't I tell you to bring the bread? You ain't tell me to bring the bread. I thought so-and-so was bringing the bread." But when folk don't have or don't think there's enough bread, they can lose their mind. They got so excited, it got so heated, till Jesus spoke up. He clears his voice as if to say, listen to this, Daryl McKnight, tone, tone, tone. And then Jesus expresses a lesson to them because they're upset with each other because somebody didn't bring the bread. And now after doing all this serving, it looks like their need is not going to be met. And Jesus said, you still don't see? You still don't understand? You got eyes, but you can't see. Ears, but you don't hear. You still don't understand. And Jesus said, you remember when we fed the 5,000? How many loaves did we start with? And how many was left? How many baskets did we pick up? Started with five, ended up with 12 baskets. We just finished feeding the 4,000. How many did we start with and what did we pick up? Started with seven, picked up seven baskets. How many loaves do you have now? He said, we only got one. Jesus had to deal with them that way because they're arguing about, they're fussing about bread in the presence of bread. They are fussing and fretting about not having enough bread in the presence of the bread of life. Because if they didn't have no loaf, as long as you got as long as you got the bread of life, your needs will be, your needs are going to be met. And isn't it funny, as soon as they land, guess who's waiting on the shore? A blind man. Jesus just told them, y'all can't see, and watch what he does. He takes a moment and heals a blind man, because here's somebody who couldn't see but could see. And here they can see but can't see. I ain't got time to deal with it. You catch it in a minute. They have a conversation about who is the Messiah to redeem themselves. I guess Peter gets an A+. You are the Christ. And then Jesus says to them, you're right. And then plainly he explains to them what's about to happen to him. The Messiah, the one you say, the Christ, my life is going to be taken. They're going to kill me, but don't worry about it. I'm going to rise again. Jesus spends this time, all of this is an example of what discipleship is really all about. Hungry, thirsty, naked, sick, suffering, blind, bound. And Jesus deals with all of it. And then he says to them, after he tells them about what's going to happen to them, he calls the crowd and the disciples to him. And in essence, here's what he says when he calls the crowd along with the disciples to him. In verse number 34, it says, whoever wants to be my disciple. In other words, this is open to everybody, but I want you to look at something here. He calls the crowd and his disciples. And in essence, he's saying, if you want to be my disciple, in essence, he's inviting people to discipleship, because he asked the question, whoever wants to be. And so here's what I want to ask. I ask the question, and your answer is, but before you give me the answer, I want to walk you through this little text, because you need to say the answer from the depth of your heart and not from your lips. Because just like I said last week, when you look at the autobiography of George Gilbert, chapter 3, verse 1, you can make your mouth say anything. Here it is, what I want you to consider before you give me the answer. You need to come to a conclusion. You need to come to a conclusion. Look who Jesus is talking to. Crowd and called. And there's a difference between being in the crowd and being somebody who's called. 34, it says, and Jesus called the crowd among his disciples. Let me explain it real clear. Not everybody who's in the crowd is a disciple. You don't get to be a disciple just because you showed up with the crowd. I've been chuckling because as the FBI have been chasing down folk and people are now being held accountable for what they did or going into the Capitol, there are people that say, I was just in the crowd. I didn't take nothing. I didn't break nothing. And one lady said, they never told us to leave. You still broke the law. I'm trying not to get distracted. But there's a difference between being in the crowd and truly being a disciple. Here's what a disciple is. A disciple, you can't be a disciple without being a student. A disciple is somebody who's learning. A disciple is always learning. Always growing. Yes, I know you've been to college. You took Trudy Rasko's inductive Bible study. That's more than some folks study in college. I know, and you've been doing it for years, but you still have more to learn. A disciple is always learning. A disciple is a student. A disciple is a follower. Matter of fact, Jesus explains it like this in the 31st verse, the person who hears my word, and let me put it like this, and heeds my word, continues in my word, then you are my disciple indeed. Ultimately, discipleship is learning to the point where you can teach somebody to teach somebody what you learned, which means you're always learning and you're always teaching. You're sharing with others what has been shared with you, and you take it to a level of excellence. You take it to a level where the Spirit of God does it in a way where God gets the glory, because you're always studying, you're always learning, you're always growing. Disciple is different from just being in the crowd. A disciple responds to the call, which means you gotta say whether or not you wanna be a disciple. And here's the last one. A disciple is an imitator. It's an imitator. He imitates the teacher. We imitate Jesus. We don't become Jesus. We want to be like Jesus. Every now and then you run around some crazy folk who says, I am Jesus. Well, you are a lie and the truth ain't in you. To our best, we want to be like Jesus. Hey, you remember that commercial when Michael Jordan was playing ball and they had that commercial, like Mike? I want to be like Mike. And they would show highlights of him dunking, show highlights of him sailing through the air. Well, Mike imitated Dr. J. And now the players that come along, you got somebody like Steph Curry, who grew up watching Michael Jordan. 2 weeks ago when they were playing the Portland Trail Blazers, somebody that week said something mean against Steph Curry, as if to say, Steph ain't all of that. and made Steph mad. And one of the things you'll discover when you got a real athlete, when you have somebody that really loves what they do, when somebody says you ain't doing it right, they have to show you. And Steph stepped on the court 2 weeks ago, I think it was January 3rd, against the Portland Trail Blazers and scored 62 points. When he scored the points, they were interviewing afterwards by saying, "What were you trying to say?" He said, "Well, you know, that's just some stuff I took personal." Like Mike was a great player. Steph Curry, they're saying he's the greatest shooter of all time. But here's what I want to show you. Steph didn't wake up that morning and started playing basketball. See, what we see is when he steps on the court and when the game begins to play. But what we don't see is all the hours he spends running up and down, all the hours he spent lifting weights, all the hundreds of shots that he puts up every single day. We get to see them when they're playing, but we don't get to see them when they're preparing. And if you want to be a disciple, there's a great deal of preparation before you stand to do any presentation. There's preparation that goes well before presentation. And before you answer, you go this question, you need to be honest with yourself. You want to be a part of the crowd, or you want to be called? The invitation is open to whoever. He'll take you. And here's what I love about it. He'll take you just as you are. What's that on your breath? We ask that, but Jesus don't. He'll take you just as you are. Won't he do it? One of Satan's biggest lies is to make us think that we have to clean up ourselves in order to be ready to be received. You got to come to the conclusion. You want to be part of the crowd or called? And once you answer that question, it leads me to my second point. It's good for you to have a conversation with yourself. I don't care how you do it. You might go in the bathroom if you want to. You can put on your phone and put FaceTime and flip it if you want to. I don't care how you do it, but it's really important that you have a good conversation with yourself. And here's what's important to tell yourself. The first thing you need to tell yourself is that if you're going to be a disciple, you've got to come to grips with the fact that life is not all about you. Yeah, it's your life, but it's not all about you. Jesus made it clear. You've been bought with the price, which means our life belongs to him. Our life should be lived for him. He indwells us by the Spirit of God so that we can have the power to carry out the agenda that God has called for us. If you're going to be a disciple, the word I needs to decrease in your vocabulary. Not about your life. It's not all about you no more. Secondly, because your life is not all about you, you got to come to grips with the fact that you can't have everything you want. As a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ, you can't have everything you want, and you can't have everything you want when you want it. Even the stuff he wants you to have, you can't always have it when you want it. Because some of the stuff we want, We don't have sense enough to know that it's not good for us. And as a loving father, sometimes God will do one or two things. Because he's father, he's got sense enough, he'll do one or two things. Sometimes he'll absolutely deny us what we're asking for because he knows that what we're asking for will destroy us, will hurt us, will harm us, will hinder us, will hinder our destiny. But then, Dwight, ain't it funny? Sometimes God will do the opposite. He'll give us what we ask for so that we'll know that the Father does know best. Is there anybody up in here and out there that can testify, God gave me what I asked for, even though he knew? And then we grab the receipt and we stand in line and want to give it back, but there's some stuff you can't return. Hey, listen up. The other night, I watched a movie called Sylvie's Love. Junior, I almost liked it. I was liking it. Young man developing his gift as a musician, young girl submitting to the will of the father, working in their daddy's record store. She was kind, she was sweet, she was smart, and I almost liked it. He courted her, but she was committed to somebody else. I almost liked it. They realized that their hearts really, they loved each other. They were attracted to each other. And I almost liked it. But then it finally hit a point of transition where they parted. They went on to live another life. They came back years later. Even though she was living another life, married, but the thought of him, she couldn't get it out of her system. She finally reached a point where she told her husband to his face, I'm tired of living for you. I want to do something for myself. I like the movie up to that point, because you done already gave your word. You already made a commitment. But then listening to the devil, you reached the point where you didn't give a doggone what you said before. She said to his face, with tears rolling down, I'm tired of living for you. I want to do something for myself. And I said, that statement is going to be a big problem for a whole lot of Christians. Because if you start looking to that for your theology, you're going to be in trouble. It is interesting, you don't hear them talking about God nowhere. It is interesting, they went to the club, but you never saw them in church. It is interesting. But for the people of God, it's unfortunate that sometimes we allow the world to shape our theology, our thinking, our thoughts. And the truth is, I don't care what you feel, you can't always allow your feelings to control your decisions. Have I got a witness here? I'm telling you, suppose I was married 5 years and finally decided, Trudy, I'm sick of this. I want to do what I want to do. Suppose she decided after 25 years, I'm sick of this. I want to do what I want to do. You can't just up and do what you want to do, giving up your word, your commitment. Now, I'm telling you, if you're in an abusive situation, That's another story. But just deciding one day, I'm ready to live for myself. Because when you get married, you don't live for yourself. It ain't about what you want. It's about what God wants through the two of you. Paul said, that's why some folk need to stay single. Because when you stay single, you ain't got to think about that other person. You don't have to put up with the other person. When you stay single, it's just you and God. Hey, Jerry, anybody still on? Okay. Bless y'all. Bless y'all. I know the finger. I know their fingers. I just got one more for you and I'll be done. I really did. I almost liked it. But the message is you don't live just for yourself, not as a disciple. As a disciple, it's, oh, I'll do it. I can do it this way. I told you that you've got to come to a conclusion. You want to be a part of the crowd? Are you going to respond to the call? Have a conversation with yourself. It's not all about you anymore. You can't have everything you want. You can't have everything you want. Some of the stuff you can have, you can't always have it when you want. Because it's not about you anymore. It's about living unto the Lord. Here's the last one. In order to be a disciple, you got to come to grips with the fact you're going to have to carry a load. They didn't hear you, Trudy. Say it again. Yeah. Trudy said, oh yeah, you're going to have to carry a load. Look at this verse. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. You're going to have to carry a load. Here's the first one, John. It's going to be a load that you didn't ask for. And we spend a whole lot of time looking at other people's load. We look at Junior and say, shoot, don't look like he got a load at all. Look at Iresi. She just got a grocery bag. That don't seem fair. I got to take care of and him and her, and I got to do this and I got to do that. It don't seem fair. I know. Quit looking at other people's loads, because you don't know what's behind the load. You don't know what comes with the load. I'll never forget one of the illustrations an old preacher used one time. He said God allowed him to walk through the yard and pick his load. And he went through and picked up one. He said, nah, that's too heavy. Picked up another one. When all was said and done, the load he picked was the one he started with. Because God knows, here it is, what you can handle. Because just cause it's little don't mean it ain't heavy. Just cause it ain't little, just cause it's little, don't mean it ain't heavy. I said I wasn't gonna say this, but I can't help it. But isn't it good to know that God knows just? You don't have to carry a load that you didn't ask for. Jesus is demanding that you keep it close. Mark doesn't say it this way. Another text says, you got to pick up your cross and carry it daily. Daily. It's a load that you didn't ask for. It's a load that you're expected to keep close. And there'll come a point where you will be known by the cross you carry. You got to keep it close, and you're going to be known by it. And there may come a point you're going to be nailed to it. You do know Jesus had to carry his own cross, and you do know ultimately he was nailed to it. But whatever else we know about a cross, we do know this: a cross reaches out for the benefit of others, and a cross reaches up to God. Whatever else we know about a cross, when he died on that cross, somebody else lived. His death brought life to somebody else. Whatever else we know about a cross, the cross you carry ought to bring strength, deliverance, life to somebody else. Hey, when you get a chance, look up some of the folk who died during the civil rights. You hear about people like Martin Luther King. We all know about him. You hear about Emmett Till. We know about him. There was this preacher named Green out of Mississippi. Did voters' rights. Folk told him to stop, but he did it anyway. Ended up being murdered and nobody. There's a whole list of them. Google it. People who died for the benefit of civil rights. Because ultimately, for a group of people to move forward, usually somebody had to die. Hey, go on and rewind. Peek back into 2020 a little bit. Some of this stuff wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for Breonna dying. Some folk wouldn't have gone to the voting to vote again if George Floyd hadn't died. There's some people that have to die in order for some other folk to live. That's what happens when you carry the cross. And here's the other one. And you got to carry the cross. Watch what the text says. In the midst of an adulterous and sinful world. In other words, God is expecting you to walk for him and carry his cross in the presence of people that don't understand why you do what you do. People who talk about you because they don't understand why you sacrifice the way you sacrifice. People will dog your name and call you a stupid fool because you give the way you give. Have I got a witness? But this is an adulterous and sinful world. And God's looking for some people that will walk for him in the presence of sin. Folk can't ever be what they don't see. They got to see it in order to be it. Here we go. In the words of the pilot, final approach. Why should you do this? I'm suggesting, Jesus is suggesting, that you do this because of a term called ROI. It's a business term. It's called return on investment. I'm studying. I'm in school right now. I've been studying e-businesses. I'm going through school right now. And I did a module the other night called Understanding If It's Worth It. They said you got to figure out before you make the purchase if it's worth what the money you're going to spend on it. You say you got to look at what it's selling for right now. But not, you can't just look at what it's selling for right now. You got to look back to see what has it sold for historically. Yeah. Then you've got to consider all the cost. I'm just rehearsing my homework. You got to pay for it. But then once you buy the item, you've got to get it to the warehouse. In other words, there are fees that go with trying to ultimately get it to the customer. Let me cut across the field. Here's the bottom line. Once you've paid for it, once you've paid for all the fees, you need to discover what's left over. And what you're looking for is to have something left over. I spent time coaching Uncle Junior with Uncle Junior's ice cream. I said, Junior, you got to keep record because you want to know after you've paid for everything. You've paid for ice. You've paid for flavor. You've paid for your labor. What's left over? And if you have anything left over, it ought to be more than you started with. What you're hoping for is that you'll have more than you started with. Not just getting your money back, but you want more than you started with. And watch what Jesus said. In the future, there is an appointment for all my disciples. I've already put it on the schedule. And every disciple is going to have to come to the appointment. They're going to have to stand before me and the Father and the angels. Watch what he says. And if you're ashamed of me before men, I'll be ashamed of you before my Father. There is an appointment down the road where we're going to have to stand in the presence of Jesus, in the presence of God, in the presence of the angels. And Jesus is going to speak a word. He's going to speak a word. He's going to speak a word about you and about me. He's going to say something like this. They were a part of the crowd, but one day they became my disciples. They were a part of the crowd, but one day they opened their heart and let me step in. They used to be a part of the crowd, but they became one day my disciple. They had a conversation with themselves. They decided to carry their load. Have I got a witness here? And I want to speak up for them. Have I got a witness here? Ain't it? Ain't it? Won't it? Won't it be grand when Jesus speaks a word for you? I close with this. Why don't you speak a word for him? And if you'll speak a word for him, one day he'll speak a word for you. And then you gotta go somewhere in glory and sit down Yes, you're going to have to sit down and start counting your ROI. What did you start with? And then look at what's left over. My head was down, but now my eyes are lifted up. My heart was sad, but now I've got joy. Yay! Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. There'll be a great return on your investment. You'll have more than what you started with. But it's because you moved from being part of the crowd to being a disciple. Conclusion. Just because you're in the crowd does not mean you're a disciple. Go and have that conversation. Life is not all about you right now. You're going to have to deny yourself. You're going to have to put some other people ahead of you and trust God. Trust God to see you through. You're going to have to carry some loads, something you didn't ask for. You're expected to keep it close because God asked his son to do it, and he has something for all of his children to do. But one day when it's all said and done, you'll be glad because he'll speak a word on your behalf, and the reward you receive will be far greater than anything you sacrificed. That's the joy of being a child of God. That's our hope. That's our promise.